This podcast is brought to you by Legend Comics and Coffee in Omaha, Nebraska, located in scenic downtown Benson. They got a new location. It's absolutely gorgeous. Check it out. And by listeners like you. Go to Patreon.com/Two-Headed Nerd. Become a patron. Support this show.
Once, they were two best friends managing a comic book store. But when an innocent blood oath went wrong, the two found themselves trapped in the same body, imprisoned in a strange pyramid made of long boxes, buried deep below their hometown, where they are doomed to discuss comic books until the end of time. They were once Joe and Matt. Now they are known as the Two-Headed Nerd. And this is their podcast.
Broadcasting from the Ziggurat at Omaha in caverns deep below the metro area, it's our pleasure to welcome you to another back issue show, episode 794 of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast. I'm your head number one, the internet's Joe Patrick.
I'm your head number two, my name is Matt Baum, and it's time for another back issue show where two flat scans revisit a 30-year-old X event to compare it to its modern-day counterpart.
Sir, I will not abide that kind of racism in my ziggurat.
Hey, we're flat scans, so we can use that term. That's fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Some of my best friends are
flat scans. Our word, Joe. We're taking it back. Okay?
Okay. All right. All right. If you are a patron, then you know that we've been reading all of the new X-Men Age of Revelation spinoffs. So Macho, our live-in synthesoid helper and program director, decided to revisit all of the first issues of the original Age of Apocalypse event and decide who started off better. My guess is Matt is going to force us to do a which age was better show when all is said and done. But right now, prepare for a Marvel Universe shaped by the ultimate survivor, En-Saba-Nur himself. It's back issue time in the Ziggurat.
This may sound insane, but 30 years ago, there was no internet. So when Marvel Comics used its propaganda arm, Wizard Magazine, to announce the cancellation of all the X-Books, fans everywhere clutched their pearls and fainted. They all had fainting couches. It was adorable. At the time, the X-titles were Marvel's top sellers, so of course, this was just a ruse to sell even more comics with an event that would totally reimagine the Marvel Universe. It all started when Legion, the son of Professor X, the guy with the really tall kid in play hair, you know, traveled back in time, intending to kill Magneto, but he accidentally killed his own dad. Whoops!
Uh-oh.
Now, it sounds stupid. Professor X is like, no, I won't let you, and got killed. It was a whole thing, right? This was in the pages of another event called Legion Quest. That mistake created a completely altered reality where Apocalypse ruled most of the world, and every character you knew and loved was
North America.
Mostly completely changed.
Sure.
Now, Joe and I remember the Age of Apocalypse as one of the best X events in Marvel history. In fact, I'm pretty sure it was my number one pick on our THN Top X Events countdown. It may have been yours too, but I can't remember for sure. This was not long ago, so it's just sad. We should know this. So it's time to find out if we are still as excited. Joe Patrick, let's see how these number one issues of all the Age of Apocalypse spinoffs, I guess we're calling them, hold up after all this time.
I mean, they're tie-ins.
Yeah. Macho, fetch our Age of Apocalypse tie-in number one issues.
Just wait until you hear Sir Matt attempt the daring feat of pronouncing the name of Joe Madureira. It is, I assure you, a spectacle all its own. And now, gentlemen, your comics await.
We're going to go in alphabetical order. It only seems right.
Even though that does not necessarily make sense, I found, because there are definitely some events that happen in one book that carry over into another.
True, but we went in alphabetical order for the other one, and similar things kind of happened.
I mean, yeah. Whatever.
So, you know, I want to be fair. Now, there's less of these, mercifully.
The books don't have feelings, Matt.
Yeah. No, but I mean, for the sake of the
For the scientific experiment, right?
Yes, the experiment. Yeah. Mercifully, there's a lot less of these. There's only 8 of them we have to go through. And all of these were replacement books. Several of the books from Age of Revelation are also replacing books, but there's also a bunch of new ones. All the ones we're going to discuss today replaced something. And we begin with Amazing X-Men number 1. This replaced your X-Men proper book. Fabian Nicasio was your writer. Andy Kubert was on pencils. Matt Ryan on inks. Kevin Summers and Digital Chameleon were your colorists. And Richard Starkings and Comic Craft pretty much owned Marvel Comics at this point. They were doing like everything, as I recall. Your team members. Quicksilver, he was your leader. And, you know, Magneto's son. Storm, Banshee, Iceman, Dazzler, and Exodus, which is interesting.
Yeah. Exodus.
Sure. Exodus is a team teleporter. As you know, he's a bad guy in the 616. Big bad guy. But here?
Exodus's powers are whatever the writer wants them to be.
Kind of, right? It seems that way.
He's got telekinesis, usually.
Yeah, like because he was running around Krakoa. He was a good guy there for a while because we brought him.
He was a high member of the Quiet Council.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as I recall, yeah, again, they were just like, oh, man, he's crazy powerful. Don't mess with Exodus. And everybody's like, what's he do? And they're like, oh, man, he's crazy powerful. Don't mess with him. So, you know, it's what it is.
I mean, the thing with Exodus is that he's a true believer in Magneto's cause. He was like king shit of the Acolytes.
Right.
And so.
Right.
If Magneto's on the side of good, well, then guess what? Exodus is on your team.
So,
and in the Age of Apocalypse, Magneto's on the side of good.
Yeah.
And so is Exodus.
And Magneto is also like the biggest badass next to Apocalypse, basically. They're setting him up like, oh man, he's so tough. Whenever he shows up, people are like, whoa. And they all listen That's to true. Him. Bishop is like the one guy that kind of remembers, hey, this is not right. Like, I don't know if it's a product of him jumping time or whatever, but he totally has some memories.
Because Bishop was the last X-Man present. Okay, don't quote me on this. I think it has something to do with the fact that Bishop was there when the timeline, like, started to overwrite itself. But because he's from the future, like, his own personal timeline wasn't affected yet or something like that.
I'll buy that. That sounds
like, yeah. It's time travel reasons. Like, sure. Like Bishop was there and he saw it go down. He remembers the world before because he was there when reality went white and everybody woke up in this new world.
Okay. So from what I'm seeing, Bishop remembers the proper Marvel universe because he is the same time displaced character. Like,
yes, they're saying is like, okay.
His presence during the timeline.
This is where we're getting into Age of Marvel Comics time travel dynamics.
Right, right, right.
In the firmament of the Marvel Universe, the rules are there's no such thing as time as altering the future or the past. All you do is create a separate timeline. There is one main timeline.
Oh, no, here. Yeah, okay, this exactly explains it. So when Legion accidentally killed Charles Xavier, creating a new Age of Apocalypse reality,
Legion
vanished and a new timeline was created. Bishop is the only person aware of this new reality because it happened in the past for him. He's from the future after this is fixed.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just summing it up.
Yeah. No, but yeah, it's so because you can't change the past, you can only create an alternate reality. Essentially, the deal is that this is an alternate reality created by Legion fucking around in the past.
Yes.
And Bishop remembers it because he's the Bishop from the 616 universe.
He does not trust anything here, though. And like he's watching this.
Oh, team because everything's completely wrong.
Yeah. He's watching this team of X-Men train. And one of them is Exodus, which he has to know is a big bad guy. So he's got to be like, bleh.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. This is after Exodus was on the scene. And right. So they know who he is. We should say that. Most of this, the stuff that we're describing, other than Legion Quest, there was a one shot called X-Men Alpha.
Right.
That sort of set the stage and established like these are the groups. Yeah. Gambit is this, you know, Nightcrawler is this. And that's what introduced Bishop. And that's where Magneto and his X-Men run across Bishop, who is rambling because he's been driven sort of crazy.
Right. And as this is going to, well, yeah, his mind is all messed up because
his eggs are scrambled.
Right. Yeah. So each one of these books is going to set out a mission, the mission for the Amazing X-Men. Magneto assigns him to travel to Maine. There's a large group of human refugees that is gathered there. And the X-Men, this group of X-Men are supposed to commandeer a fleet of Apocalypse's Sentinels, which are being used to guard the coast and reprogram them to safely transport the humans to the protection of the Eurasian High Council. Europe, still doing okay. America?
Right.
Real
Apocalypse has only conquered North America.
Yeah.
And really, maybe only America. I think parts of Canada are still okay.
So let's just talk about the characters real quick here. Because, like, what's other than Exodus, good guy? There aren't a lot of, like, major differences that I'm seeing in the... I mean, Iceman looks really weird.
There are cosmetic differences, yeah.
There's some serious cosmetic differences, yeah.
I think Iceman is using his powers in a much more, like, elemental way. Like after Emma Frost got her hooks in him and taught him how to use his power. So he's using his powers on, like, an expert Omega level, kind of.
And they
kind of
hint that he can't die, or they think he can't die.
Well, because he's made of ice.
Right.
Like, I don't think Iceman has a human body anymore.
Yeah. Cause
or like, at least he doesn't turn human.
There's a whole thing that goes down when they're going to get the Sentinels and it's like, he'll be killed. And they're like, nah, he'll be fine. He's Iceman.
Yeah. You can blow him up. He does this stuff
all the time.
He'll come back together. Storm is here. She seems exactly the same.
Bishop,
Quicksilver.
Dazzler is completely different. She's got the worst hair I've ever seen. She smokes and she's wearing a terrible costume. I don't know where Andy Kubert was going with this. This is so bad.
I mean, look, I've seen Dazzler wear some shit. Okay.
Not this bad. What you worse costumes than this? I don't know, dude.
I mean, this is 90s.
Roller skating Dazzler is better than this, dude.
You know what? There's that robot nanny that we that came up early in an earlier episode.
Yeah, she is in that X-Men. She's in, pardon me, that book that Havoc is the leader in, and she's taking care of his kid in the bubble in Age of Revelation. The same nanny. So
yeah.
Throwback, whatever. I love the way Kubert draws Magneto, though. Just like Magneto is 9 feet tall. 1,000 pounds of rippling muscle.
Wait till we get to the X-Force book.
Oh, yeah. And you cannot see his face. It is pure darkness in that helmet.
The helmet is much more broody in this
realm. Oh, yeah. There's a reoccurring theme that runs through here that Magneto is respected, but also feared. Like, they work for him. This is not Professor X. He's not like, oh, we love you, Professor, like a father figure. He's scary. And when he shows up, everyone's like, oh, shit, Magneto's here. And Magneto's like, you're going to do this. And they're like, yes, sir.
It's like when your very strict military father comes back home.
Yeah. Yeah. He also, like, now we'll get to in the next book, Magneto and Rogue are together. But every time he shows up, he seems to sort of manhandle the women that are around. Like, he's grabbing Dazzler.
You know what? I didn't really notice that, but I also wasn't really looking for it.
He's kind of grabbing Daz a little bit here. And I don't know how comfortable I am with that.
Oh, yeah. He is kind of grabbing. He's doing a weird face touch thing. That's awkward.
This book is, look, it's Andy Kubert going full Andy Kubert, 90s Andy Kubert, which was.
Yeah.
Just spaz attack art. Everything is stretched out and huge and insane.
I mean, in a good way.
These are adjectives
that I would not use to describe this book, but okay.
No, I think like if you didn't grow up in this and you look at this art, like if you just showed it to someone today, they might be like, whoa, what the fuck?
But this would have been familiar to anybody already reading X-Men.
Totally.
Because he was the regular artist on X-Men.
Yeah, he was on the X-Men. I love these new Sentinels, though. The new Sentinels with the weird...
I have always loved the new design of the Sentinels from Age of Apocalypse. They're blue.
They've got like a real Battlestar Galactica look to them, kind of.
Yeah, they look like giant Transformers.
Yeah, I love it.
Right?
Absolutely love it.
And you know what? You know that Fabian Nicieza wrote this because copycat's in it. And if there's one character that Fabian loves, it's copycat.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to put that woman in everything he writes.
Well, he drops a few more characters in here that he absolutely loves. So
that is true. We go
to Maine to bust everything up. Things go bad, of course. And the team is ambushed by Abyss, one of Apocalypse's horsemen, and his Brotherhood of Chaos.
Now, I think Abyss was first introduced in the Age of Apocalypse. I might be... No, I'm wrong.
No, you can check. I even made a sheet that you can check.
He was first introduced in Cable? Fabian's X-Men.
They're cool as hell. I love them. And they're being led by... Is this Alex? Is this Havoc leading them?
Well, I mean, yeah, because he's a prelate. So he works for Apocalypse, right? He works. And so it's, gosh, I'm not sure who this dude with the teeth is. The tusks.
Yeah, I thought he was Wendigo at first, but you've got Arclight, Box.
Well, that's Grizzly.
Spine, and Yeti. This is Yeti.
Yeti.
Yep. Let's see.
Some of these must be new. Oh, who's this? Who's this robot dude?
Box.
Yeah, Box, right.
That a Box,
because
from
they
Alpha
mentioned
Flight.
Madison Jeff. They name drop him as Madison Jeffries.
Yes. Yeti, I believe, is a new character. I thought maybe it was a take on someone, but I believe
I thought it was Grizzly from the Six Pack.
Yeah, I mean,
apparently I'm wrong.
Why not? But no, I don't believe so. I believe
he definitely looks like Wendigo if Wendigo was less monstrous.
Agreed. Yeah, first appearance, Amazing X-Men number one.
This guy with the tusks was never seen again.
Yeah. And like,
I
don't know why they like, there's certain characters they introduce that are takes on other characters that we'll see more of later in the Marvel 616. There's other characters like this that are just like, okay.
Well, and it's like, when you've got so many characters, why do you need to create new characters?
Like
you don't have an ex villain that you could, that nobody will care that you completely change.
Who knows?
Like,
who knows?
Were there people writing letters that because they were mad about Box? I doubt it.
I don't know. But these characters are cool and they look cool as hell. And Andy Kubert drew them and they showed
up.
And
cool
I went
in the most 90s way possible.
Oh, yeah. Shit. They're going to kill Quicksilver and the X-Men, which I really liked Quicksilver leading the X-Team. It's fun.
I like Quicksilver with the X-Men. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and this is a much more well-adjusted Quicksilver because, he grew up with his daddy.
Yeah. I'm giving this one a buy it. I think it's a great first issue.
Are we doing that?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of did it for the other ones too. And it is all of these, we should say, are germane to the main story because they have missions.
Yeah, we didn't rate the Age of Revelations ones. We just said, are they essential to the plot or not?
I mean, we kind of did both. We ended up rating them and saying,
we did give our opinions. Yeah. I mean, this is great. This is fun.
This
is a buy it. But yeah, you're right. Every single one of the Age of Apocalypse tie-ins is key to the story of Age of Apocalypse because there are only 8 books. And so they're all a piece of the puzzle. It's not like this Age of Revelation nonsense where they're like, here are some that matter. And then there's a bunch about Spider-Man and Cloak and Dagger and whatever. They're all important.
Right. All right. Let's move on. Next up, we have got Astonishing X-Men, which is replacing Uncanny X-Men. And look at this Joe Madureira cover. I mean, come on, man.
This is fucking killer, man. This isn't the cover everybody like holds up. It's the number 2 cover is the one that everybody loves.
That's
where it's
a super
Rogue,
hot one. Definitely.
The close up of Rogue with the X-Men in the background. But this cover is pretty great. This Joe Madureira cover.
Oh, it's so great.
And it doesn't matter what book it is. Magneto's ponytails are going to be a different length.
Oh yeah. Sometimes they're 7 feet long. Sometimes they're 6 inches long. It just depends.
The main point though, is that he's got 2 of them like a teenage girl.
I was listening to a bit of an interview with Joe Madureira earlier this week. And he was talking about when he first came.
All right,
on.
Pause. I want you to say this with
Madureira. And when he first came on this,
nope.
Say, I'm going to butcher it.
Madureira. Madureira.
Marinarnia. I was listening to an interview with Joe Marinara, and he was talking about how he came on the X-Men right after Jim Lee. And
so terrible.
They got piles and piles of hate mail saying, this guy sucks. Get him off the book. This is the worst.
So Jim Lee switched over to the self-titled book, right? Just X-Men.
Yeah.
And Jim was gone off the book by issue 10. Around that same time on Uncanny, you had Will Spartaccio drawing it for a while. Then Brandon Peterson drew it for a while.
Yeah.
And like Brandon Peterson, God love him. I think Brandon Peterson's great. He is nothing compared to Jim Lee.
No, he was like, what if Jim Lee had a third arm that couldn't draw as well?
And like people were mad that everybody looked like they came out of a manga.
Oh yeah.
Like
people were pissed.
But people back then, they didn't really know what it was that they were seeing. Like they just looked like, why does everybody got big eyes? Blah, blah, blah. Because they didn't. Manga and anime wasn't as ubiquitous.
I want you to say this with me, Joe. Ubiquitous.
Hey, manga and anime weren't as ubiquitous as they are now.
So,
with 90s comic fans, because there was no internet.
Our Astonishing X team. Your writer, Scott Lobdell, penciler, Joe Marinara, Matt Urira, inks, Tim Townsend and Dan Green, colorist, Steve Bucciolato, letters by Chris Eliopoulos. Your team, Sabretooth, who is a hero in this reality, wears gloves. Because he will never kill again with these hands. He's learned his lesson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, he will.
Blink, a young, powerful teleporter. Very new character. She was very hot. Morph, wisecracking shapeshifter. Not the Morph from the like early 60s X-Men. Like, totally different Morph here. More of a cartoon character.
Well, so you're kind of mixing characters up. Morph was based on the character that impersonated Professor Xavier in the 60s called Changeling.
Oh, right.
And so this Morph, like, this is the first appearance of that character as Morph.
But there was another Morph.
And
right?
We've got the animated. No, you're thinking of Mimic.
Mimic. Sorry, you're right.
Yeah. And so you can thank X-Men, the animated series, for giving us Morph as a code name, because that's where they got it. And this or a version from an alternate reality of this take on Morph would end up in the Exiles and become a beloved character in that book.
So we've got Sunfire, who's been horribly scarred and is trapped in a containment suit. By the way, never looked better. I love this Sunfire.
Love it. Yes, I love Sunfire.
Sunfire is so great. Wild Child is here as well, because if you're going to have Sabretooth, you may as well have a mini version of Sabretooth that's just as nuts, or if not crazier, right?
Well, he's got to keep him on a chain.
Right.
Because he is wild.
We also get a peek of Magneto sending everybody on their missions, like when it opens. Banshee's here, Storm is here, Nightcrawler's here. More on them later. We already talked about Banshee and what he's got going on, but more.
He's handing out assignments here. This isn't really
All their looks, though. This new team, the Joe Mad designs are fucking awesome. Aside from Blink, which he looks like he didn't even try on. She looks like she's dressed for Dungeons and Dragons, where she's going to like the Ren Fair. It's like a little green thing.
Yes, but so Blink was a character that existed in the 616 for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
She was introduced during the Phalanx Covenant storyline, and she was like a total shrinking violet, didn't know how to use her powers, and she sacrificed herself to save the team that would become Generation X. And so this is that character, much more sure of herself, much more in control of her powers, with a proper costume design. Yes, it looks weird, but this, at least it's a design.
This Sunfire, though, is so cool.
I love Sunfire. Yeah. I love this version of Sunfire.
Why did we ever get away from this version of Sunfire? It's so rad. I love this. And this book looks so good. This is full Joe Mad. You love him or you hate him. And I think if you hate him, you're just being a jerk. Because this book, yes, is it manga inspired? Without a doubt. But he's coming at it from an extremely classic comic book background. Like, his POVs aren't weird or anything. He has a style, sure. But everything else is, this is an X book. There's no question. He didn't reinvent X-Men or anything and make it look totally different.
Well, yeah, no, it's just that he's taking his inspiration from manga and anime, but he is drawing it very much like a traditional American comic.
So the team is sent on a mission, but before they can leave, Gambit shows up. There's a tense conversation between him and Rogue, and we're like, what's the deal? These two, him and Rogue, they're in love, right? Not here. No, they broke up. She's dating Magneto.
They're married. They're married and they have a kid.
Ooh, man. What a mess. What a mess.
So it the book basically ends with Rogue and the team leaving in their weird space pod thing.
Yeah, getting ready to go to Chicago. This is, it's all set up. It's all talking heads. I don't care. This book is awesome.
It's very dynamic. It's like the art is very exciting. And it's not that there isn't action. Like
there's a little bit.
Sunfire comes blazing in out of control. Yeah. You know, Morph is acting the fool, which is very funny.
Yeah. The Morph is basically the only comic relief that we have in this entire event from what I can tell.
Yeah. Age of Apocalypse. Yeah.
Again, super serious. Again, when Magneto shows up, everybody freaks out. Like continued theme of this. And again, which we haven't really gone into or mentioned yet, but everyone is writing so much in every panel on every page.
I mean, it's the 90s and this is Scott Lobdell and Fabian Nicieza at the peak of their abilities. You've also got Warren Ellis in the mix and John Francis Moore, who we haven't even touched on yet.
Yeah, we'll get there.
But yeah, they're getting paid by the character, as you like to say.
But they've also got four issues to tell this story. And they're cramming a lot in here to get it going, to get the mission going and everything, and set up the world. And I would argue so far, just with these two issues, even just revisiting it and not reading X-Men Alpha that sets everything up, they do an excellent job. And maybe it's just because they're doing a different thing than Revelation. Like Revelation happened in the regular Marvel 616 and this is going on. And we brought Cyclops's brain here. So we got to explain some stuff, right? This is like whole new world, man, whole new world. And we got to set everything up.
Yeah.
I think it's a plus.
Now they are operating under the assumption that they can go back in time and fix things, only to discover that oops, the Age of Apocalypse universe will exist beyond this.
Right.
The same thing happened with Heroes Reborn. All the heroes left, and reality should have been fine. But oops, nope. The Heroes Reborn universe still exists.
Yeah.
And so that's just how things work in the Marvel universe. You know, if you watched Loki, you get it. Loki season two is all about the jumble of timelines.
Sure.
And, at least for these first two X-Men books, everything gets reset in each of them. Like they're all like, and here's this Bishop, this, memory addled, stranger who keeps saying the timeline is wrong, blah, blah, blah. And so they do a great job of informing you whether you're picking up all the books or whether you're picking up one of them. Which is how things were back then.
Yeah, totally. And I look, so far, I'm on board. This is huge. Buy it. Having a great time.
Buy it.
And this is absolutely essential.
Astonishing X-Men. If you had told me, like, I would have said Astonishing X-Men was definitely towards the top of, all of them.
Absolutely.
In my memory because of Joe Madd.
And well, not just that. It's also completely essential to the story.
In my memory as a 14-year-old.
Sure.
You know, when this came out, I was like, oh, God, yeah. Joe Madd. Hell yeah.
Speaking of John Francis Moore, we move to Factor X, number
one. Okay, let's just talk about it.
For the first book that I might say felt a little tertiary to me. Like, I don't know if you really need to read this story.
Well, I mean, you kind of do, but you also kind of could have just shoved this stuff into other books.
So we've got Factor X number one, written by John Francis Moore, penciler Steve Epting, who I totally forgot.
Young Steve Epting.
I forgot how old this guy was. He has been around.
Steve Epting drew the Avengers for many years.
Yeah.
He drew... Jesus. I mean, the guy's been around for 30, 35 years. Yeah.
Al Milgram on inks, Glynis Oliver on colors, and Richard Starkings again is your letterer. This is the story of the bad guys. All right. Here's your cast. Prelate Cyclops, Prelate Havoc, Dark Beast, and Mr. Sinister are your main stars here. These are bad, bad guys. They're all working.
North Star and Aurora.
North Star and Aurora do show up as well. I don't believe they're actually prelates, though. I think they're just characters.
I don't know if they're prelates, but they are right here, like following Cyclops' orders when they
work
down
for people. That. What is it? That EMF or whatever Sinister's group. They're called the Elite Mutant Force, the EMF, which Havoc runs. They're like his underlings.
Yeah. And so they work for Apocalypse, and Mr. Sinister is sort of like their wrangler. We find out that not all is well in Sinisterville.
Well, Sinister runs the pens, and Sinister, completely different than we've ever seen him before. Get this, Joe. He can't be trusted, and he's up to his own schemes.
No way. Not Mr. Sinister.
It's shocking. I know.
I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah. So Steve Epting is on art, and this is very, very 90s Steve Epting. The designs are of the bad guys are something. They're very military, very... I don't love this Cyclops. He's got a bunch of shit on his head.
Steppy, you can say it. They look like Nazis.
God, well, not just
Havoc
that.
Havoc looks like a Nazi.
They look very Nazi, which makes sense. They're working for the bad guy. I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about all the extraneous bullshit. Like Cyclops.
I always thought Cyclops looked kind of cool, but the rest of them look like garbage.
I don't think he looks very cool. Yeah, I don't like, he's got one eye that fires a laser instead of two. Big difference there.
He's a Cyclops.
His hair
only has one eye for real.
His hair is ridiculous. It's like shaved on one side and super long on the other, I guess.
Well, that's because you can't have long hair getting in the way of your one good eye.
And in typical 90s fashion, all the main guys that are in charge are wearing Backstreet Boy earpiece microphone things, I guess.
Yeah, yes. The 90s headset comms that are so prevalent in the X-Men around this time.
Sure, they got to talk to each other, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. But we are in the pits here, and this is basically where Sinister and Dark Beast do their dirty work. Their job is to create the next generation of mutants for Apocalypse, but instead of accidents, right? Like the Marvel Universe, where you find out you're a mutant when you hit puberty and nobody really knows why. We're going to make the mutants we want, and we'll do this by literally dipping mutants into, I don't know, a pool. Beast calls it his
mutagen.
Pool. He calls it genetic gumbo, which is gross.
So what it says is that he's breaking down faulty mutants or mutants they deem unworthy.
Right.
He's breaking them down to their genetic soup. And then using that to beef up mutants that he thinks can be better.
Right. We meet the Bedlam brothers here, who are new characters. There's Bedlam and King Bedlam, and they're twin brothers. One of them messes with technology. The other one messes with people's minds. So when they show up, like everything goes screwy, basically.
The Bedlam brothers exist in the 616. They are from John Francis Moore's X-Force.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Jesse Aaronson, yes. And Terry Aaronson.
Factor X number one is their first appearance, yeah. But they do show up in the 616 eventually, specifically when John Francis Moore is writing X-Force.
And let's just talk about John Francis Moore writing this book, because
yeah, sure,
he writes a lot, and everybody is bad, and it's kind of exhausting because it's just like every page is like, oh, you think that guy's bad? Wait, do you see what this bad guy is doing? He's doing even worse bad things.
I mean, they're bad though. This is a book about villains.
I know, but it's all every villain. Literally every page is one of the villains. Like Havoc's torturing a guy and they're like, oh man, that's gross. You're so bad. And they're like, oh yeah, Northstar is going to also torture a guy even worse. And like, oh, you're a total jerk. And then Aurora shows up and she's even worse. And then the Beast shows up and they're like, you're the worst of all. Like, I get it. Okay. Everybody's bad, bad, bad.
And, yeah.
And they all talk way too much.
They do. The only one that's kind of like having second thoughts about things is Cyclops, because obviously it's Cyclops,
right?
And so you kind of get the sense that Cyclops is not as on board with the eugenics as everybody else is.
Something's going to go down later, obviously. This design on Sinister, and this is saying something here. This is the worst Mr. Sinister design I've ever seen.
The Mr. Age of Apocalypse Mr. Sinister is so fucking stupid.
It's bad. If you squint, it's Colossus with long hair and red shoulder pads. It's so bad.
It's like, what if we took Mr. Sinister's existing design and we just painted his shirt red?
Yeah. There's a,
and then we gave him a mullet.
There's a lot of this book that reminds me of Genosha stuff, like the soldiers that were, you know, torturing. Like,
yeah, for sure.
They're even kind of dressed like them, right? Like the how Jim Lee designed everybody. But it is, I guess, it's an interesting look into what's going on the apocalypse side. We get a fairly interesting story where we see like Warren Worthington walks the in-between. He's got a club, like a nightclub.
It's sort of like, you know, it's very tropey, like
it's Casablanca.
Tropey,
it's Casablanca. Casablanca.
It's the place where good guys and bad guys can hang out.
Yeah, it's Casablanca, where the Nazis and the
other Casablanca, sure, yeah.
You can't hear me, can you? I just said it like six times.
No, I was talking and I didn't hear you because I was talking. The hotel from the John Wick movie.
Sure.
You know, it's like everybody congregates there. It's sacred ground, like a church in Highlander. Yeah, you can't do anything like
that. Nobody would ever mess with it except for Peter Gyrick, who is an idiot and shows up. He's a human terrorist. And he's like, no one's going to push Gyrick around or whatever. It doesn't last long. And who's his? I can't remember the main squeeze's name. She's like a lounge singer.
Scarlett McKenzie.
Scarlett McKenzie.
I don't know. I don't think she's anybody in the universe at all.
Yeah, I don't think she's anybody. And it seems like they missed a chance to do an undercover dazzler thing here because there's even like lights around her and shit. I don't know. Regardless.
Well, she's a nightclub singer.
Yeah. So. Not important. So there's some interesting stuff that happens here. They're setting up some stuff with Cyclops. I don't like his design or whatever, you know, but I don't know if that's Steve Epting's fault. This is definitely not my favorite Steve Epting art. I'm giving this one kind of a skim it.
It's a skim it, yeah. So according to this handy spreadsheet we found, Scarlett McKenzie has no 616 equivalent.
No, she does not.
She is one of the only, there are only like five characters on this entire list that do not have a 616 equivalent.
Yeah.
She's one of them.
We did not find this list, Joe. I made this list, okay?
You got this information from somewhere, though.
I abused certain things in my own company to make this list. So.
How nice.
Yeah.
Now, I think that this has some interesting ideas. Yeah. I think conceptually it's very good. I just think that the execution is like, boy, it's long-winded.
It's
boy,
clunky
it
as hell.
Long-winded.
It's clunky as
hell. But like, there is a lot of fun ideas. Like one of the prelates flunkies is Cannonball and also his sister, but it's not a sister you've heard of. It's one of the sisters who's dead in the 66.
Oh yeah, Elizabeth. She was a human. She was a civilian.
Elizabeth, she died. Elizabeth is dead.
We will see Paige in just a little bit, but not quite yet.
We will see Paige, yeah.
See Paige
and so bit. I think that kind of thing is fun, you know?
Yeah.
And Havoc is dating the human nightclub singer, which is a big no-no, you know? There's a lot of drama.
Yeah.
But it's just a slog, kind of.
There's one thing we know about Havoc. He's always dating someone that he shouldn't be dating.
Havoc makes bad romantic decisions.
He really does. All right, let's move on to perhaps the most exciting title that we have in this lineup. Gambit and the Externals, which obviously, if you were reading X-Force at the time and you were having a good time, you were like, what book should I pick up that replaces X-Force? It's Gambit and the Externals. What a terrible name. It's so bad.
Well, I mean,
Gambit is
I'm
hot.
Not judging it as harshly. I think they're called the Externals. I don't know why they're not just called Gambit and X-Force.
Right. Why not? Or Gambit Force or whatever. I get it. Gambit's hot at the time, right? We got to get an X in there
somewhere. G-Force. Gambit and the G-Force.
Replace the A with an X so it's Gexmit or whatever. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. This book. I'm going to admit, I remember this being way worse than it actually is.
The art is very flashy.
The art is flashy because it's Tony Daniel. We've got Fabian Nicieza and Tony Daniel in art. Kevin Conrad is your inker. Marie Javins, your colorist. And Chris Eliopoulos is your letter. This is the X-Force creative team at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to place these books in like a time frame. With the 616 books, like Generation X had just started.
Right.
So Generation X only got to four issues before Age of Apocalypse happened.
Brutal bummer, guys. Sorry.
So when it went back to normal, the next issue was number 5.
Yeah.
X-Force was right around that time where Sunspot was like turning evil. He was becoming Rainfire.
Oh God.
Like he had like an evil thing taking him over or something. That. I don't even know what the fuck Rainfire's whole deal is.
God, I hated it.
But he looked like a Jerry curled vampire, but painted all black.
And wore a stupid costume. He had a costume
too. And they all have these dumbass bondage costumes on. Because so that's bad. Tony Daniel.
Regardless, Tony Daniel, flashy as hell. This book looks great.
Draws the hell out of it, that's
this
for sure.
This book looks great. I've never seen Strong Guy look better. Let's give our cast, your externals. Gambit, Remy LeBeau, your team leader, Jubilee, Sunspot, Strong Guy, and ex-favorite of Matt Bomb, Lila Cheney. Because we got to have a teleporter on every team.
Yeah, right. I love Lila Cheney.
Which I kind of like. And I will say, everybody here looks great. Tony Daniel draws a fucking kick-ass strong guy. Love it. Guido looks so good.
The talent is on full display. That is not in question.
Yeah.
However, Tony Daniel has never seen another human being in his life.
No, that's not what you hire Tony Daniel for. He draws little tiny girls and great big monsters. You know, that's his job.
Okay, sure. That's fair. Yeah.
But you're right. This is full like Rainfire, Sunspot. I don't know what is going on with
the anatomy on these characters is so bonkers.
Oh, it's terrible.
Especially the dudes.
It's absolutely terrible. I kind of love the way it looks, though. I gotta admit it.
It's dynamic.
It's completely dynamic.
It's really fun to look at.
Yeah, this book grabs the hell out of you, no question. And again, when Magneto shows up in this book, Tony Daniel draws him like a rabid professional wrestler.
and what's more is the externals are like, oh shit, like Lila, get behind me, I'll protect you.
Like they're gonna kill him
because, yeah.
Well, and there's a reason for this, as we know. Gambit and Rogue are not together. Rogue is with Magneto.
Yeah, because Gambit and Magneto are enemies, basically.
And Gambit is out on his own with his team, kind of doing the X-Force stuff that X-Force was kind of doing when the X-Men were doing their other shit. That's not to say they were at odds, but X-Force was its own thing. Like
X-Force was like a paramilitary.
Yeah.
Like X-Force. Think of the Uncanny X-Force when they became like a kill squad.
Right.
It's exactly the same, but minus the killing. X-Force has always been like a strike first, ask questions later paramilitary squad led by Cable, trained by Cable to be soldiers.
Right.
And that's what X-Force has always been. And so these characters are accustomed to just like getting in the mix and always having everybody be mad at them.
Yeah. Yeah. And we got kind of a Suicide Squad kind of mission for him here. So
a little bit,
we're going to send Bishop back in time to fix everything. Right. But it's going to be really hard. So we need something. The Macron crystal or the M-Cran crystal.
It's the M-Cron.
Whatever. M-Cron.
Yeah. You're overworking it. It's just M-Cron.
All we know is it's in space.
If you watched the X-Men animated series, you'd know exactly what the M-Cron crystal is. It played a big part in the original Dark Phoenix saga. It was the thing that the Shi'ar had that like altered reality.
It lives in space.
It's in space is the point. Yeah, it's far, far away.
This is where Lila comes in. Because Lila, unlike the other teleporters we're dealing with, who are like, you need me to get to Chicago, I can do that. Lila can teleport you into deep space. No problem. She's really...
Lila is a long-range teleporter. Super powerful. She does not teleport you across town. She teleports you across galaxies.
I love her. I love her so much.
I do, too. And they must have needed to fill this book because there's this whole, like, sequence where Lila is not a mutant. They're like, Lila has no power. She's just a human. And then Magneto's like, JK, you're totally a mutant. Sit in this chair. Sit in this chair. I'm going to put this hair salon blow dryer on you. Yep. And it's going to turn you into a mutant.
Well, no, they had her captive. They had to go rescue her. So I assume they put a brain whammy on her or whatever. Also, you know, like if you've got her and it's like, oh, she might get the M-Cran crystal or whatever and go back in time and fix everything. Why not kill her while you got her?
Right? Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on who wiped out.
But Lila's being held and they had to go save her so they can go get the crystal and whatnot. I will say, I'm on record as a guy that does not like Gambit, that thinks Gambit's design is totally stupid. I like Tony Daniel's Gambit. I think he looks great.
He looks a little bit, he looks a lot more like a hobo in this.
Yeah, I like it. He's ragtag. He's wearing a cape. He's got like...
Sure, I mean, he looks like a gentleman thief of New Orleans.
Bandage up arms. I enjoyed Gambit and the Externals way more than I remember enjoying it.
Pound for pound, no Age of Apocalypse tie-in will give you more weird typed out dialects.
Oh, God, yeah.
Than Gambit and the Externals.
No, there's so many.
Because Fabian Nicieza is just like... Turned it up.
Yeah.
I also like, I really love this. There's this group of like cultists that protect the cult. And they're all just multiple mans.
Yeah.
They're Jamie Madrox, all of them.
Right. And they're all like believers. It's like all the multiple men awesome. are in a cult.
And they call them the Madri.
Yeah.
Or the Madri, which is awesome.
It's very cool. This book is a ton of fun. Way better than I remember it being.
Yeah.
It's a buy.
It's very fun.
And it's the super art, important.
I cannot stress it enough. The art is ridiculous, but in a very fun to look at way.
In the best way. Yeah, ridiculous in the best way. Love this book.
This picture of Magneto at the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's...
It's like people make fun of that Rob Liefeld Captain America with the like...
People should make fun of this.
What? The fireplace mantle chest pecs, right?
Yeah.
This is like up there as far as ridiculous drawings of
human beings. I demand you put this in the post so people can go and look.
I put it in the Discord already, but yeah, I can add it to the post.
Oh, it is something. Well, nerds, we did it again. We set out to discuss 8 comics in an hour to an hour and 15 minute show and ended up talking for almost 2.5 damn hours. I don't know why we haven't learned this lesson yet, but that means we're going to do you the mercy of splitting this into 2 episodes. So stay tuned for part 2 when we discuss 4 more exciting Age of Apocalypse tie-in number ones. And then we're going to break down who started better, Apocalypse, the original back in the day, or Revelation 30 years later, because we read all those too. But if you're a patron, you know that. And if you're not a patron, what the hell's wrong with you? $1. You can get this crap for $1.
Excelsior! Oh.
That is it for THN 794. Next week, the new comic show returns with reviews of 8 new comics. If you need more THN in the meantime, follow the link at twoheadednerd.com and join our Discord. Then, join us for the THN Gang Hang on Saturdays at 11 o'clock Central Time. Find the link and join our Discord, just like our newest member, Swaddle.
Hey.
Who is awesome.
Welcome aboard, Swaddle. Don't forget to like and subscribe if you're watching the show on YouTube. We put up some fun pictures there, probably just covers and stuff, because I'm not going to have time to go through all the panels of crap we talked about today.
No.
Oh, my God. It's a full-time job. Or, you know, give us a rating wherever you're downloading your podcast. Give us a review. It helps. It gets us in front of other listeners.
Hey, look,
and I get it.
I'm just putting it. I'm putting it out there. If you want Joe and Matt to become more successful full-time YouTubers, you know what you have to do.
Yeah, it's on you. And long-form storytelling like this, not exactly popular. If our show was 9 minutes long, we'd be millionaires, okay?
Yeah, it's true. We would be out back feeding issues of Age of Apocalypse into a giant shredder for
shining our million subscriber, you know, like plaque and everything, yeah.
THN is a listener-supported podcast, as we were just mentioning, and it would not be possible without the generosity of donors like our patron and longtime supporter and friend, Chris the British Guy, who is having a baby. Our boy's growing up.
Aww.
Chris and his wife, Anna, are expecting Mazel Tov.
Still can't understand a word he says.
Right, I mean, he doesn't
speak English
like we do. If you like what you hear every week and you want access to exclusive THN content like Chris, it is easy to support the show. You can sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/twoheadednerd. Normally, Matt does the shout out for the back issue show, but before we go, I wanted to give the shout out to my THN-tober art squad who joined me along in our inaugural Inktober replacement drawing exercise. Looking at you, Lincoln Bunger, Hugo Tverdick, Frank Cirillo, Jim Stafford, and everybody else that played along. John Bunger, I love you guys. Thank you for supporting me and encouraging me. If you want to see all the work that everybody did during THN-tober, go to our Discord and check the Creators Workshop channel. It's all there.
Until next time, true believers, Remember to pre-order your comics or your retailer might just dip you in the genetic gumbo, destroying your genes, leaving you bottomless with, you know, your naughty bits hanging out. This is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.